Welcome to this afternoon's theology session. My name is Janet Warren. I'm going to be chairing the session. We have three exciting speakers for this afternoon on diverse topics. Our second speaker hasn't quite showed up yet, but we might juggle the order a little bit. We have 20 minutes for the presentation, 5 minutes for questioning, and 5 minutes for transition. If you're having trouble hearing, there is more space up at the front. So, our first speaker is Dick Fisher, who many of you know is a longtime member of ASA and has presented on similar topics before, and he's talking about the patriarchs and kings, as you can see.
Well, good afternoon. Let me get some things out of the way right up front. The Sumerian king list contains pre-flood and post-flood kings who ruled in southern Mesopotamia from no earlier than 4800 BC to roughly 2000 BC. 17 copies have been discovered. I was able to find about half that number. Many of the kings are non-Sumerian. Until 2371 BC, the official language was Sumerian, then became Semitic Akkadian overnight when Sargon came to power. Most Near East historians find Sumerians interesting and act as if no other people group was important. Historians avoid any mention of Bible personalities, especially Adam and Noah. Theologians, on the other hand, concentrate on biblical characters and events and proceed as if the nearby Sumerians didn't exist. Historians do accommodate a people group who spoke a Semitic tongue and lived in the same region with the Sumerians. They also recognize Semites. They do not recognize Adamites. Maybe all Akkadians stem from Adam, or it may be that Adamites comprised only some of the Akkadian population. Akkadians may contain Ubaidian elements, and some Akkadians may have married Sumerians. Dated to 4800 BC, the oldest city, Eridu, was excavated in 4142. Pottery fragments discovered at the bottom were identified as Ubaid, with an unidentified pottery they called Eridu ware. Although Ubaid pottery had been found in settlements further north, dated to an earlier period, this new pottery may be indicative of an Adamite population that moved in. Here I've juxtaposed Adam through Abraham against the relevant time periods in the Near East. I think you can see that. A little closer focus, Adam would have been around 4800 BC, consistent with the archaeological date, the flood around 2900 BC, which is a consensus date, and then Abraham was between 2000 to 1800 BC during the Old Babylonian period. There are four rivers and three lands that pertain to the Garden of Eden. This is the Kuwait River, which is no longer a river anymore. It is a dry riverbed, which comes out of Saudi Arabia, where there's gold, bdellium, onyx stone, just as described in Genesis. This would be the Pishon. The Gihon today is called the Karhay, joined by the Kashkan, that comes out of an area called Khuzestan to this very day. Genesis says Cush. This would be the Tigris or Hiddekel. Here's the Euphrates. So we're looking somewhere in this area, and out of Eden, a river went out of Eden to water the garden, it says in Genesis. Early settlers, Ubaidians in the region, diverted water from the Euphrates down an ancient dry riverbed to furnish fresh water to Eridu, the garden, Ubaid, and Ur, probably in that order. Here it is on the map. This is what they used to divert the water. We might call it a water wheel. They called these fountains. In the background, you can see a river. They called any body of water the deep. So this would be a picture of a fountain of the deep. You see that in Atrahasis, Fountain of the Deep. You also see it in Genesis. When kingship was lowered from heaven, it was in Eridu, said the Sumerian king list. And Archibald Say says that the Babylonian tradition places the Garden of Eden near Eridu. There are at least a dozen commonalities between Adam of Genesis and the legend of Adapa. According to legend, Adapa was a priest in the city of Eridu. Now, they excavated Eridu, and this is what they found on this bottom layer on virgin soil, that they found this tiny shrine, and on this little altar, they found traces of burnt offerings. I contend that this was the very place that Abel presented his offerings to God before Cain murdered him. So where did Cain go? Well, the Bible tells us he dwelt in the land of Nod. Don't know too many people that know where that is, but I'll go look. However, there's another better clue. He built a city and called the city after his son Enoch. So now we're not looking for a whole land full of Nodites. We're looking for a place, a city called Enoch. Well, that's easy. It's right here on the map. All Cain had to do was travel right up the Puritum-Eridu Canal, either by boat or he could have walked 26 miles, move in with the settlement of Ubaidans, took a wife, and they named their first son Och. Later on, he grew up, he became king of the city, and he received his E-N prefix. E-N means king. Enoch. Enoch. This is what it looks like today. This is the Anna precinct where the goddess Inanna was supposed to have dwelt. Now, just by reference here, we see Cain and Seth. Everybody knows them. Then they had two sons themselves, and they were Enoch and Enosh. Those were Adam's grandsons. The EN prefix, again, means king. Well, we just saw where Enoch was king at Enoch. So where was Enosh king? Same place. Right next door, as a matter of fact. They were twin cities. Is anybody from Minnesota? Anybody heard of Minnesota? What are the twin cities? Absolutely. Well, not if you lived in southern Mesopotamia. The twin cities to you were in Sumerian, Unug and Uruk, or in Akkadian, they were Erech and Enoch. Now, I'm going to read to you a bit of Enmerkar, the lord of Arad. Enmerkar was the second king to settle after the flood in this city. He's going to tell you what the city is. Arad, you see in Genesis as Ararat. And what I want to point out to you, what is in red, is untranslated Sumerian words, transliterated into English, but not defined so that you really know what they are. So what's Kulava, Unug, An, Unug, Kulava, Ziana, Dilman, Iana of Japar? How would anybody read this and get any idea what the king was talking about? So for your benefit, I had it entirely translated. City, majestic bull bearing vigor and great awesome splendor, the twin city. Breast of the storm where destinies determine, Enoch. Great mountain, there the evening meal of the great abode of the Sumerian father god was set. In those days of yore, when the destinies were determined, the great princes allowed the sacred precinct of Enoch, the twin city, to lift its head high. Rain, which brings forth dappled barley, were then increased in Enoch, the twin city. Before the land of Bahrain yet existed, the sacred precinct of Enoch, the twin city, which we saw what's left of it today, was well founded. The holy cloister of the fertility goddess and the brick-built twin city shone forth like the silver in the loaf. Now he's told us something, and I think it's important. I'll show you this slide to show you the differences between Sumerians and Akkadians, ethnically, not just that they spoke another language. You see the Sumerian on the left, he has a bald head, big ears, big nose, no beard, and he wears eye makeup. On the right is an Akkadian that has long beard and long hair. But what I want you also to notice is that he's presenting a sacrifice to a Sumerian priest. Well, he's an Akkadian. Didn't they worship one god? Well, yes, they did. But the Sumerians had many gods. They were polytheistic. They were idol worshippers. And this is the very problem that brought on the flood. What happened to the Akkadians? They were corrupted by the Sumerians. I'm going to talk about the Sumerian king list, and by doing it, I'm going to show you a couple of Akkadians. Long beard, right? And in the middle between them is the sacred tree, which is a date palm, harkens back to the tree of life. If you Googled WB44, which is what you'd likely get if you said, what's the Sumerian king list? You'd get what's on the left. WB62 is a little harder to find, but you could find it, and you can see that they are different. I had more king lists to use in addition to these, but these were primary king lists that I used. What I did is I built a composite list so that we would have 10 patriarchs to compare against 10 kings. This is a fractured tablet, got rid of that. And when Moana is in two places, well, it's not possible, but in the other Sumerian king lists, he's in third place. I use that. So I put together a composite list from Elulam down to Zayasudra, and there's the cities and where they dwelled. Then the flood. Now, Elulam and Algar ruled at Eridu, and then a bad thing happened. Eridu was smitten with weapons, and kingship was carried to Bad-Tabira. Now, I told you I would tell you why the Sethites moved up north. War is very disruptive. I can tell you that for sure. Here's Bad-Tabira on the map. It's modern Medina today. Meanwhile, the Sethites and Canaanites are sequestered at Uruk, and side by side in twin cities. How do I know that? How would we know that? Or how would anybody know that? Well, they were naming their kids the same names. Mahujael, Mahalalel, Methushael, Methuselah, Lamech, Lamech. They couldn't have done that if they were not in close proximity. If they were in different locations, they never could have done that. Back to the composite king list, Enmenlawana and Mengelana are Sumerian kings, followed by Dumuzi. Now this is a cylinder seal impression of Dumuzi. You'll notice that he has a long hair and beard, meaning he is an Akkadian. This cylinder seal impression of Dumuzi is the world's first folk hero. Consort to the goddess Inanna. The courtship of Inanna and Dumuzi is one of the oldest love poems. The Hebrew version is Ishtar and Tammuz. When he disappeared, women of the city wept and wailed for the departed Dumuzi for centuries. The prophet Ezekiel had a vision where he's brought to the door of the gate of the Lord's house, and there sat women weeping for Tammuz. The prophet bemoans the fact that even the women of Israel are perpetuating this ritual. Even though the legends are fabricated, this provides legitimate evidence that Dumuzi was a flesh and blood human being. Women don't cry for fictitious personalities, and men don't either. He was real. If Dumuzi was a real person, doesn't that infer that the rest of the kings were also real people? And if some of the biblical patriarchs are also kings, that also infers that they were real people. So what happened to Dumuzi? Here is a clue. Bad-Tabira was smitten with weapons, and kingship was carried to Larak. Bad things happened to deposed kings. Then Inscipsiana reigned at Larak, and then Larak was smitten with weapons, and kingship was carried to Sippar. And Mendorana reigned at Sippar, and then Sippar was smitten with weapons, and kingship was carried to Shurippak. And then we have three kings that ruled at Shurippak, and I'll cover them all at once. These are the kingless cities, so they were real cities. Not talking about fictitious cities. After the flood had swept there over and the kingship had descended from heaven, the kingship was in Kish. 23 kings ruled until Kish was defeated. The kingship was carried to Iana, right? In Iana, Mesquigasher, the son of Utub, became lord and king. Yenerdisi disappeared, and Makar, the son of Mesquigasher, king of Unug, who built Unug, became king. So the Sumerian king list parallels Enmakar and the Lord of Arata. So here's the composite king list, which I put alongside Berosus using ancient Babylonian records and texts. They're lost to us. Berosus published Babylonica, the history of Babylon, in three books, sometime around 290 to 280 BC. Later writers such as Josephus included parts of Berosus. Keep in mind the patriarchs are recorded in Hebrew, the kings are recorded in Sumerian, and Berosus wrote in Greek. So, commonalities. The first two, no. Now, this is tempting because they both have the E in prefix. So, yes, Enosh was king, and Menlawana was king, but not in the same place. Enosh was king at Uruk, while Enmenlawana was king at Bad-Tabira. So, they could not possibly be the same person. No commonality seen here. Here, Berosus picked up on Mahalalel. Where he got him and why he bunged him into his list, I have no idea. He's not in any other king list that I can find. It was just his own idea. Dumuzi is in every king list. No commonality seen here. Now, when we get to Enoch and Mendorana, I've put a question mark, but I should have put maybe or perhaps or quite likely. That's because there was only one capital city at that time. There wasn't room for two kings. Enoch was translated, taken up, so that he should not see death. And the legend about En-Mandarana was that he was taken away by the gods and taught certain divine mysteries. So there's some commonality in their names and where they were, and I believe they probably were the same person. Can't prove it. And then I come to the last three. Note that Verosus keyed in to both Ubertutu and Zayasudra. Sukralam is also known as Surapak, the same name as the city. Sukralam translated means man from Surapak, so it is the same man. From a book that was translated in 1974, The Instructions of Surapak, we know that a father-son relationship exists between him and the next king, Zayasudra, since the instructions are to Zayasudra, his son. Also, both in that book and in the Legend of Gilgamesh, Zayasudra is referred to as the son of or descendant of Ubertutu. As all three are located in the same city, we can derive a father-son relationship. Zayasudra is the name of the flood hero who built a boat, put his family on board, loaded it with animals, and you all know the biblical version of that story. Here's Surapak on the map. Dated to the 3rd millennium BC, there are numerous surviving copies of the instructions of Surapak, which attest to its popularity. Here is one line often repeated. Surapak gave his instructions to his son. Surapak, the son of Ubertutu, gave his instructions to his son, Zayasudra. The legend of Zayasudra parallels the biblical flood described in Genesis. Destroy, destroy. Seed, seed. 7 days, 7 days. Opening, open. The legend of Zayasudra is the Sumerian version of the biblical flood. Thus, Zayasudra, translated he who found long life, would be the Sumerian name for Noah. Since a father and son relationship exists with both the last three pre-flood patriarchs and the last three kings, we can reasonably conclude they're the same. So, yes, there is a commonality. There's the, where the flood deposits were found, all within the tidal basin of the Euphrates. Summary. Two slides left. The en prefix denotes kingship and establishes the Genesis account and Adam's descendants in Near East history. That, to me, is the smoking gun. At least three and probably four patriarchs were kings named in the Sumerian king list. If Dumuzi Tammuz is a flesh and blood human, the Sumerian king list would be unlikely to contain fictitious characters in addition. And the flood. Genesis, archaeology, and history combined to document the historical, local Genesis flood. There's my YouTube channel. Thank you. Oh, could I start out asking them a question first? Just one.
Sure.
Quickie question.
We have about 7 minutes for questions.
So oh, good. I ended early. Okay. What month is it today?
July.
Name for? Julius Caesar. Was he a real person?
Yes.
What month is it in Iraq today?
July.
Tammuz. I'll leave you with that. Questions? Yes, sir.
Do you know anything about the connections between the Sumerians and the Samnite?
No.
The Finnish?
No. No, nothing. Well, there is some evidence that the Sumerians, when the Gushans and the Elamites defeated them, that they went up the Indus Valley and may have integrated with the Indian people. There are king lists that they found in India that do correlate to some degree with those they found in Sumer. So there is some evidence they did go that direction. Yeah. Oh, you want to call? Oh, yes, sir. Yeah, the city that defeated them was the city where the kingship went. It went to the victorious city. And as I said, bad things happen to deposed kings. You don't want to know. Not good. Either I told you everything you need to know or nobody's. Yes, sir, go ahead.
One thing about the Sumerian king lists and all those they have, you say it's significantly longer
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I'm glad you brought
that
up. Well, we don't know what unit of measure they use. They're long numbers, they're big numbers. But that's why I showed you the cities where the kingships were established. Because those cities don't go back for thousands of years. Those cities don't go back any further than at most 5,000 BC, and none of them go back as far as that. So I key in on the cities. The cities tell you where they reign and when they reign. And those long numbers, those big numbers, in fact, I think two or three of them are repeated. Two or three of the kings lived this long, same period of time. It's the same number for two or three of those kings. But it's been translated as years, and I think that's wrong. We don't know. We don't know what unit of measure they use.
Well, I mean, there aren't too many options. It's either days, weeks, months, or years.
I have no idea. It's a great question. That's a wonderful question. But I know it isn't years because they didn't live that long. They don't go that far back.
Well, the same comment would be made by people outside the faith about, so say, Noah and Methuselah. So,
see, there I find, do you notice where Adam and the flood, and there's about 1,800 years between, covered by 10 generations. We'll do the math. They didn't have normal lifespans.
Well, yeah, and they also had some sort of 1 over X decrease in lifespan as well.
After the flood, they started intermarrying, and the lifespan started dropping down. Yeah, I agree. But even Abraham lived 175, and that's not exactly an older period. Yes, sir?
Where was the tuple of Cain in the genealogy after Seth and Abel?
Well, he's down the list. What is he, seventh? Was Tubal Cain seventh on Cain's list of something like that? But, they can't have disappeared completely. Cain didn't just go off the map because we wouldn't have had the stories about his children. Like Tubal Cain, you wouldn't have known anything about him if Cain just disappeared. So they had to be in close proximity, and that's where I believe they were, right there. Sir?
What was the climate like then?
The climate has changed over the years. It was much more moist. The Gulf region was 30 miles further north. And Eridu and Ur were both coastal cities. They were right on the coast of the Persian Gulf. Mm-hmm. And that's where they did their fishing and stuff like that. But now it's 30 miles further south. Sir?
Have any thoughts about the three rivers coming together and what this now?
They do. Yeah, they do now.
And maybe Eden is in the bottom.
Well, right. They formed the Shat El Arab, because the Tigris and the Euphrates both meet now. But that's because there's a 30-mile recession of the Persian Gulf. The Persian Gulf is now receded, probably due to silting in, maybe climate change. I think that seems to be an issue.
What if the river from Arabia that's now dry actually brought Eden down closer to it into the existing Persian Gulf?
I'm not sure to know about what's happening there.
Oh, there are three rivers. One was the Pishon, one that's...
Well, the Pishon was a flowing river. But Landsat photos provided evidence that there was a river there. They seen pebble distribution, the whole thing. They know there was a river. It's now dry. There's a big sand dune over that river.
Right, exactly.
But it is dry. But it flows. It flowed right. And it passed. Yeah, right out of Saudi Arabia, where everything that the Bible describes is right there.
Would it be possible the Garden of Eden is where it floated?
I believe that the garden was right there in that same locale with Eridu I showed you on the map, with Ur and Ubaid, and I believe that Ur probably wasn't settled in those days. Where did Adam go? He went to Eridu. Why? There wasn't any other cities. There was no place else he could go. Ur hadn't been settled by the Sumerians by that time, I don't believe. Ubaid, I don't know when it came into existence. But the Garden of Eden had to be located right in that area, because that's what the Bible described. A river came out of Eden. Eden means a dry area, desert, plain, something like that. Mm-hmm. Essentially, Eden, E-D-I-N, is the land between the rivers. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir?
If you take those long lines of the patriarchs as literal, what do you do with them having their first sons when they're in their hundreds of years? Just before first ones were in their hundreds.
You see, I take it as literal because it works. It appears to be that way. In the legend, one of the tablets of Gilgamesh, he goes up to find Utnapishtim because he thinks the guy's never going to die. Noah lived 350 years after the flood.
Yeah, but this was a time when there was no contraception, there was no laws against marriage of any kind, and they were given command to be fruitful and multiply. But they're having kids when they're in their hundreds. I don't know how that works.
Neither do I. None of us will pull off that beat, I'm sure.
On the other hand, Abraham had children after he passed 100.
But it was unusual, wasn't it? It was unusual. He wasn't expecting that. He didn't say, gee, all my fathers and grandfathers and all the way back, all had fathers in their old age. He was surprised. Me? Sarah? What? We're going to have children?
Even after Sarah.
Sorry?
After Sarah, when he was widowed.
You see, I suddenly lose interest after Abraham departs and heads for the promised land. Once he leaves Sumer, I end right there. I don't know that they were. Adam and Eve had more sons and daughters. In fact, Josephus said, I can tell you who they were, but I'm not going to do it. The wife belabored the fact. So he knew who some of Adam and Eve's descendants were, some of his children were, but he didn't bother with them. That's why I don't know. It would have been good if he had it.
Okay,
thank you very much.